This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence. Helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in to the Mid-Atlantic Outdoorsman Podcast. I really appreciate everybody tuning in.
So today, I'm going to have my buddy Kale on. Kale hunts in eastern North Carolina, not very far at all from where I hunt in Virginia. He also does a lot of hunting in the same areas of Virginia that I do. And we're going to do a brief overview of the season differences between Virginia, North Carolina, and kind of how the seasons lay out. How, like, different weapons you can use during the seasons, how the seasons lay out to us, and kind of how the seasons shift through the early season, the mid-season, the pre-rut, the rut, late season, etc. How we view that, but more specifically, we're going to talk about some of the outliers in eastern North Carolina and Virginia that we think makes the areas that we hunt unique to other areas of the country. And we might talk a little bit about summer plans and trail camera strategies and stuff like that. So, Kale, how you doing, Kale?
Doing well. Appreciate you having me on. I'm excited to start talking about hunting. Turkey season's over, so next best thing is deer season.
Right on. Well, this is, like I said, this is my buddy Kale. Kale's a killer. He's hunted North Carolina and Virginia for how many years?
Probably, I think, going on, this is my 17th season, so 17 years.
Right on. And when does North Carolina season start?
So our bow season, we have an early bow season. Our bow season starts the first Saturday after Labor Day in September. So unlike Virginia, we kind of get like a month head start on a lot of things, kind of like a, I guess it would be compared to your Midwest, like your Wisconsin seasons, early bow season, stuff like that. So yeah, we'll have that coming up in a couple months. So already starting to get to working on the hanging stands and scouting and all that fun stuff that comes with the heat of summer.
Right on, right on. So yeah, every year without fail, I'm hunting literally like 40 miles east of this guy. And Kale and I have been hunting together. I should probably preface by saying Kale and I have been hunting together for, I don't know, a handful of years. And every year without fail, Kale shoot me a text or a picture or Snapchat or something to that effect around that opening weekend of North Carolina. And it's either a picture of a dead doe or a picture from a tree stand. And I'm still like 3 to 4 weeks out from season. And I'm like, dude, you suck. So that's interesting. I mean, they open a lot earlier. And y'all open with bow season, you said, correct?
Yep.
Right on. And how long does the bow season run?
It's normally 3 or 4 weekends. Normally the first Saturday in October. Sometimes it'll be September 28th, 29th, 30th, somewhere around there, just depending on how the days lie in the month. But so 3 to 4 weeks, and then we jump straight to muzzleloader for 2 weeks, the first couple weekends in October. So it's a blessing, but also kind of a culture shock when I got to go back to Virginia and pick up a bow when 2 weeks prior I was hunting with a scope and a muzzleloader.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. Yeah, it's interesting because, like you said, you say y'all's muzzleloader season is for 2 weeks, and then what comes after that?
It's gun season. It's wild, wild west after that. It's the second or third weekend in October through January 1st. And that's rifle and shotgun, so shooter's choice.
Okay, and that's the opening season for y'all's dog season too, correct?
Yeah, eastern North Carolina, and much of North Carolina, east of the mountains. Dog hunting, just like Virginia, as you've seen, is kind of king when it comes to gun season. Most people, when they talk about gun season, they're referring to dog season, not still hunting. Mm-hmm. But we try to take advantage of both worlds, specifically the still hunting more so than the dog hunting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for anybody who's listening who's not familiar with kind of how we do it in the Southeast, the dog hunting culture is extremely rich. And that, for him, like he states, starts around in October. For us in Virginia, it starts in November. And that pretty much takes the woods over. Like I said, if you're not familiar, dog hunting, Caleb, can you kind of briefly describe like how a dog hunt sets up, how that works?
Yeah, so we hunt hunt clubs here in Virginia and North Carolina, and there's public land too a little bit here and there, but we primarily focus in the hunt clubs. And my particular club in Carolina, we're very organized, very safe about it. And the club was actually founded back in 1890, so dog running culture runs deep down there. But we normally have a giant pin-up board map of the whole entire property with magnets on it. They have stand markers on it, along with numbers for where the dog hunters turn their dogs out. It's a little bit like rabbit hunting anywhere else you go in the country, but just a little bit more fast-paced. But normally everyone's on their stand marker, up in a stand. Dog runners, dog drivers turn out dogs strategically in certain blocks of woods, and try to force the game out across the paths. Not for everybody, but like we said, it's kind of what we grew up around. So you just adapt to what you grow up with and find ways to improvise for the still hunting aspect of it.
Yeah. So for me personally, when I was a young teenager, when I got into hunting, let me preface by saying I wasn't raised in a hunting family, right? So I came into hunting in my early teen years in high school with some buddies. Every weekend, they'd be going to the quote-unquote hunt club. And I didn't even know what that was, but I knew they showed up to school on Fridays with four-wheelers in the back of their trucks and shotguns hanging above their window.
Dog boxes.
Yeah, and all that jazz. And it looked sweet. So I was like, man, whatever that is, I got to be a part of it. So I asked my buddy Tyler. I'm like, hey, man, take me to the hunt club. And he took me dog hunting, and I just thought that was deer hunting because I didn't have any deer hunting history prior to that, you know. So I was like, well, this just must be what, this is how people kill deer, you know. This is what it is. But anyway, we're going to circle back. Dog hunting in and of itself is a big thing, obviously, in the Southeast, and we could cover that in a podcast on its own. If we just sat here and talked about dog hunting, we could probably do that for two podcasts straight. So I want to preface by saying Kale and I are, neither of us are big into the dog hunting. I actually don't do any of it at all myself anymore. Haven't in about 4 years, 5 years, something like that, I want to say. Kale does a little bit here and there, mostly because he's part of a hunt club that does a lot of dog hunting. But yeah, anyway, so we're going to circle back now that we're kind of covering the seasons, and I want to talk about bow season. So let's start there. Bow season in North Carolina. It's September. It's hot. What else is unique about North Carolina to Virginia?
Big one is bait.
Yeah.
Baiting's a hot topic everywhere you go, and everyone's got their own opinions on it, and that's totally fine. I respect both sides. I do utilize bait during bow season. I'm not one of those ones that tries to capital on punching all of his buck tags in September. Matter of fact, I'm just the opposite. I try to deplete all doe tags that I have over corn piles that are outside of the areas that I plan to hunt during the rut. My club in Carolina and where I hunt at is a lot of ag, but ironically, my club in general, there's not a bit of ag on it. It's all pine forest thickets, clear cuts, and a bunch of swamps in between, and we border the Chowan River. So there's 2,500, 3,000 acres plus of just swamp-infested, bear-ridden swamp and mosquitoes and copperheads, moccasins, everything you can think of. So it's not, you know, the pretty Kentucky September opener overlooking a lush green food plot. It's mosquitoes and clear cuts and briars and snakes overlooking, I don't like to use the word corn pile because that, we were trying to be a little bit more strategic about that, broadcasting it and setting up in areas using the wind to our advantage, and setting up almost to where we utilize it to where, you know, your feed trees would drop. We try to use it in coordination with bedding areas close to it and transition areas to where they're going to major destination food sources, which are surrounded outside of our property that we're not allowed to hunt. So it makes it a little bit interesting, but we get all the bedding.
No doubt, no doubt. I've been to Kale Spot, and it is thick, pretty much. How many acres y'all have total?
Because we border the game lands, which used to be ours, it's give or take, I think, 10,000, just to put a whole number on it.
Okay.
Think 3,000 acres of swamp lands and about 65 to 7,500 acres of our land, which is all pines, SMZs, ranging from logged last week to 10-year-old clear cuts, or I guess it would be cutovers and thickets at that point.
So, another thing I want to touch on just for the listeners' sake that might be listening and hearing you say hunt club. Maybe you're in the Midwest, maybe you're up north, and you're not familiar with what a hunt club is. I'm going to kind of explain it. So here in Eastern North Carolina, Virginia area, it is extremely hard to gain access to a small parcel of private land. Pretty much any parcel of private land you go door knock on, ask somebody to turkey hunt, deer hunt, or whatever, it's leased out by a hunt club. You'll see a posted sign on the side of a byway, and it'll say, posted by two letters and then hunt club. And that's just pretty much everywhere you go. So if you're hunting private land, it's either your family's or you're a member of a hunt club.
Yep.
Not to say there's not small parcels here and there that you can lease or find or whatever, but it's a gold mine if you do. You can find your 140 acres, keep it.
Yeah. You know, to yourself.
Yeah. No doubt. Because it's tricky. So, I am a member of a hunt club in Virginia. We're a still hunting only club, so we do not run dogs. We have about 20 members, and we hold about 3,000 acres that we lease. Kale, like you mentioned, he's a member of a hunt club. And you've been there for how many years?
Since I was 16, 17. I'm 32 now, so it's been 15, 16 years. So I've been there a while and kind of grown up in the culture. And like you were saying earlier, when you first get introduced to hunting around here, I'm not going to say every person experiences this, but most of the time, you're just introduced to dog hunting, the gun season. So you don't really know any different. You watch the TV shows and you're like, well, when do they turn the dogs out? You start doing a little bit of research here and there and realizing that there's, you know, bow seasons and muzzleloader season, and then our gun season, which you had mentioned earlier, but I also didn't come from a hunting family. I had one member that was the president of a dog hunting only club. And so that's what I was raised on. And then through baseball and sports, I met some friends that dad's hunted, and they offered to take me hunting in Virginia and taught me about, you know, bow hunting, muzzleloader hunting and all that. And that's all I prefer to do now.
Right on.
Yeah. But as you mentioned, I'm part of a dog hunting club, and our club has specific rules where Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays from sun up till about 3 o'clock, it's an organized hunt day, which means it's a dog hunting only day. So if you want to hunt that day on the property, you got to sign in and you got to be a member of that hunt. Sometimes I will sit those hunts out and wait till 3 o'clock and show up to go get in my stands in the afternoon, figure out where they turn dogs loose to figure out what the pressure is. Or other times, because it is a fun camaraderie social aspect too. You know, I'll participate in the hunts. It's can be the most exciting thing, one of the most exciting things you've done when the chase is coming to you, or one of the quietest things. So,
yeah. So one thing to mention about Kale specifically, is, and we're going to probably cover this entirely on another podcast because we could sit here and talk about it for 3 days, but something that Kale has become successful with over the last 5 or 6 years is utilizing that dog pressure during the rut, because as he said, North Carolina season comes in really early, well before the rut, and the dog season starts well before the what most people would consider like the peak breeding season for deer. Kale has learned over time how to utilize that dog pressure to kind of find pockets where the bucks are still running, which is a really, really interesting topic, but way too much for this topic. This is just, like I said, going to be a brief overview, but I just want to throw that out there and kind of give you some props. So, no.
It's definitely helped in work for my success over the past year. So it's not 100% science, but I get a little bit more action than I would if I was just going into it blindly.
Yep, I remember a story from last year you told me where basically like, so Kale at his hunt club, they had an organized dog hunt in the morning, ran dogs, everybody comes back, they're eating bologna sandwiches, Kale grabs his muzzle loader, goes back out. Don't y'all have like a weird rule where you can only use like the muzzle loader?
Yeah, so after a dog hunt, it's during our gun season, you can only use a muzzle loader or a slug gun, no rifles, which is, it's fine. I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm. Most of my shots are sub 100 yards anyway, so it's not going to make a difference. But yeah.
So Kale goes out, everybody's eating bologna sandwiches for lunch. Kale's had his buck on camera in a pinch point, and he goes to that area in the middle of the day. I want to say it was like 10 o'clock, you get on stand or something like that, right?
Along those lines. It was a little bit more in the afternoon. It was actually after the 3 o'clock hunt.
Okay.
They had ran dogs 6 days straight. Our opening day of gun season, those 6 days.
Okay.
They run dogs every day. No block is safe. And I had just gone back to a tree right after that 3 o'clock hour where I was allowed to leave and go hunt and still hunt, to where I had found just some good, honestly, just fresh sign. When I say sign, I just mean, you know, scat on the roads. Mm-hmm. And I was just going to go try to pop a doe. I had one or two doe tags left. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened, buck showed up October 23rd after running that block all week and was trailing that or putting his nose down and following that trail where those dudes were going, all that scat was, and 20 yards later.
It's pretty awesome. Probably pissed off them dog hunting boys.
Yeah.
A good bit with that one.
Yeah, a little bit.
But anyway, let's circle back. Early season, bow season. So I'll talk a little bit about early season where I hunt. So I hunt two areas during the early season in Virginia. One's going to be here in the coastal region where I live. And when I say coastal region, I mean, as we're sitting here talking, we're 10 minutes from the beach. Like, we're on the coast. And I hunt in kind of a rural portion of the coastal region. And like I kind of mentioned briefly in the intro, it is primarily ag, low-lying swamp, and it's a highly populated area. It's basically urban. I mean, you're surrounded by neighborhoods and people walking their dogs by you and stuff like that. But it is a farm. It's one of the few standing farms that are left in that area of the county. And I'll do a lot of my early season hunting there. And most of that for me is just food source hunting. We don't have the bedding on the property. The farmer I have, as far as the timber is concerned, is only about 14 acres, so it's not much timber. Big fields. It's about 250 acres total. Like I said, about 14, 15 acres of it is timber. The bedding for these deer is going to be in the cattail marshes behind that, which is well off the property. So I'm hunting them at the food source, which in the early season, for me, can be extremely successful. If it's soybeans, super easy. I mean, because they're still hammering the soybeans for me on usually our opener somewhere between October 1 and October 7, depending on where the first Saturday falls. And that's been really successful for me. Corn usually comes off the week prior to the season opening, which has been successful for me also. But I, for some reason, have more success on soybeans. So for me, it's just finding defined trails coming out of the timber, setting up 5 to 10 yards inside the timber just off of the field with a good wind, and wait for him to come to the food source, which is usually about an hour prior to daylight, 20, 30 minutes prior to daylight, something like that. For you, you said you're primarily hunting bait in North Carolina early season, right?
Yeah, we have white oaks on the property, but they're so sparse and spread out that normally they're in a place where it's not prudent to be able to hunt anyway. Like, they're not located next to bedding areas. They're just one random oak tree here and there, and very few of them drop. I'm not a specialist in oaks by any means. Right. I go to check them, you know, throughout the day to see if, you know, there's a, any that are dropping, try to find some fresh sign and find a place to be able to set up and hunt over them during bow season, but it's very rarely the case. So most of my September just does and strategically placed corn piles.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my, that was going to be my next question. You kind of answered it there, but your goals during early season, like you're not usually, I've noticed you're not usually, like you don't usually have a target buck that you're after by then. If you do, he might be in an area that you're kind of saving for the sweeter time of the year. When you get some more daylight movement. And basically my question is, your goals during early season is primarily knockdown does, right?
Yep. Absolutely.
Cool. Yeah. Same here. Obviously if I see a nice buck, I'm going to send an arrow, but the goal for me in early season is typically does, just smashing does.
And it's normally in areas where we're not trying to set up on our rut spots, you know, our pinch points and all your stereotypical, you know, good buck bedding areas, or I don't know if buck bedding is the right word, but buck areas that you're trying to hunt during the rut. Mm-hmm. So
if you could paint a picture of like a prime early season doe hunt, North Carolina at your hunt club, I would assume it's going to be like bedding area is north of you, corn pile south of the bedding area, you're south of the corn pile 20-30 yards, and yep, your access is behind you with the wind in your face. Is that close?
Yeah, and most of the spots that I'll pick are central in the club. During the off season, when they're not running dogs through there every day, the deer kind of calm back down a little bit, but I'll use those as my doe areas because I know during our rut those blocks are going to be ran so hard that a buck that I'm wanting to spend a tag on, I'm not saying isn't going to be there.
Be ran hard with dogs, right?
Yeah. Your bucks are going to be on your outlying blocks of woods and close to the swamps and stuff like that. So I got no problem setting up on good looking spots that actually hold bucks too. It's just when I want to focus on them, they're going to be chased by dogs out of there.
Yeah, for me, not so much coastal Virginia. Like I said, coastal Virginia is mostly just hunting those edges of those fields, really. That's kind of just all I have on the lease that I have in here close to home. But when I'm in central Virginia, over there in the flatland country that I was telling you about prior, early season for me, same, it's kind of same story. It's all about does. I'm just smashing does. White oaks are king, pretty much, where I hunt. I mean, it's pretty similar to where Kale hunts. It's a little bit more ag, quite a bit more ag than where Kale hunts. But we do have a lot of white oaks, and especially in like the pine thicket areas. If you go to like the streamline management zones, within those SMZs, there's going to be white oaks, and that's typically a really popular area. Last year was a little bit different for me because it seemed to me like not a single white oak tree in the entire county pollinated.
The whole southeast, it seemed like.
Right. So I couldn't find a white oak. I'd pay you if you could fill a handful of white oak acorns last year. And I looked and looked, man. I mean, I tell you, I couldn't find one. So last year for me, I dove into bedding areas and just waited till deer got on their feet naturally towards the tail end of last light. And I mean, I had some success with that. Killed a couple of does with the bow last year, but it was all just in tight to bedding. Really not a clue as to what their food source was because I wasn't anywhere near ag fields or white oak acorns that were dropping or anything like that. It was just, all right, well, deer live here. There's deer sign here. I'm going to set up here, and maybe a deer will come by, and it worked out. So
yeah, that's when the game plan comes together.
So next, in North Carolina, bow season's over. What's the date one more time for, like, roughly when y'all's gun season starts?
First of October.
Muzzleloader season starts.
Yep, first of October. And that'll go for 2 weeks. If I have decent bucks on camera, and I'm not a deer scorer, I'm probably pretty bad at it, but I know the difference between a forked head and a cow horn and then a fully racked buck 16-17 inches wide with decent height on it. And normally those, I don't care if that's a 4-pointer or a 10-pointer. If they get, you know, if they're at their ears and have somewhat decent mass to them and height, that fits the ticket.
No doubt. So, probably needless to say, in the area that we hunt, killing a 160 or like a fully mature deer, whatever your definition of that is a little bit more difficult than maybe some of your areas, Midwest, up north, et cetera. And I think, personally, a lot of that has to do with the dog hunting pressure. The dog hunters pretty much shoot every deer that runs in front of the dogs. So that's going to keep a lot of deer from reaching a mature age right there.
3 years old if we're lucky.
Right.
Three years old. If the deer's made it 3 years old in Virginia, North Carolina, in a dog hunting club, he's done something.
No doubt. So with that muzzleloader opener, you're hunting in the bow season, you're hunting tight to bedding, corn pile with the bow. How do your tactics change with the muzzleloader? Does it change at all, or are you just changing the pipe?
So if I run cheap trail cameras, I'm not worried about busting does during early season. If I do, I do. If I don't, I don't. I'm not really disheartened by it. But if I do have a decent buck show up on any regularity during bow season, normally my tactics change a little bit. I will keep my camera in there and stay out less, mm-hmm. Or stay out more of that area, and that's no longer a doe killing spot. I normally, the clear cuts that I hunt are 2 to 3 years old, so it's broom straw about 4 to 5 feet high. Mm-hmm. So my muzzleloader season areas look the same as my bow seasons, mm-hmm. but if I get a decent buck on camera, I back out and I'll save that spot. I'll quit bow hunting it and save it for muzzleloader only because I'm hunting clear cuts.
Okay.
And a lot of times, you know, those deer, those big ones, they're not going to come in at 5 o'clock, mm-hmm. you know, like a doe would show up. Mm-hmm. So what I'll do is I'll actually move away from the bait pile.
Okay.
If he's got any regularity, he's showing up, you know, last light or even an hour after, mm-hmm. that's when I'll break my climber out and I'll try to find an area 200 yards at a minimum away from that bait pile,
okay.
to where I think he's bedding at, and try to catch him earlier. And that's where the muzzleloader comes in, because it's not always a 20-yard shot in a, you know, 200-acre clear cut. Sometimes it's 100 yards, 75, 25, mm-hmm. and I normally don't shoot past 30 with a bow.
So. Gotcha. Yeah, so to kind of recap on that, so in the bow season, you're hunting kind of just right on the outskirts of the bedding, right? That's kind of where you keep a bait pile.
Yep.
And the does will daylight onto the corn easily, which is kind of where you get your early season success from. And then once you shift to using the muzzleloader, the only thing differently you're doing is, rather than hunting the outskirts of the bedding, you're getting in the bedding, but you're getting into an area, I'm assuming, really high,
yep.
where you can see a ton of that clear cut and see pretty much anything that's going on in there.
Yep. When muzzleloader season comes in, I'm beyond till the end of the season. I live in a climber. I very rarely hunt a ladder stand or anything else.
Okay.
Even during bow season, I'll set up climbers and just leave them in the woods. But yeah, that's the main difference. And I tell you what, it's truly fun hunting a 3-year old clear cuts with a broom straw, because
it's
literally like bass moving through lily pads. Even if you can't see the deer, all of a sudden, if anyone bass fishes and they, you know, fish lily pads, they know what a lily pad knocking around means.
Uh-huh.
And when you see that clear cut start to move and branches part, and it's starting to zigzag through the clear cut, you get your heart up, because it could be a doe, it could be the one you got on camera.
Just, no telling.
No telling.
Yeah, it's cool, man. So early season for me is going to look a lot different than it does for Kale. For me, Kale has now been bow hunting, killing does for almost a month. And now he's got a muzzleloader in his hand. He's transitioned to the bedding areas, and he's kind of going after those target bucks. And my season is finally opening. So that's cool. So now I'm starting to bow hunt. Like I said, I already covered kind of how I'd go about early season. And we can go in deep on that on a different episode. But in Virginia, we're bow hunting from about that first week of October until about the first or sometimes beginning of second week of November, depending on when the dates fall. Usually first week in November. And then is when our muzzleloader season opens, which for us is usually right around the time that the rut starts kicking off. So yep. Muzzleloader season and the rut fall hand in hand. I think that's part of why everybody praises muzzleloader season so much and how much success they have. Maybe they do or don't correlate. That's when the rut is, but
yeah.
So anyway, yeah. So at this point, Kale has shifted to, he's hunting with a muzzleloader. He's bow hunted for roughly a month over bait, and now he's shifted to hunting inside the bedding with a muzzleloader, chasing after some target bucks. And this is going to be early October time frame. And about that time now, finally, my season has started. So, yeah, by then I've already gotten a couple pictures from Kale. I'm pretty fired up. I'm ready to roll. I already touched briefly on kind of the style that I like to approach early season with when I'm in the coastal part of Virginia versus when I'm in the central flat part of Virginia. And, yeah, so then we move into our muzzleloader season. So here in Virginia, we don't get the brief early season window and then roll right into muzzleloader like y'all do, obviously, as you know. Here in Virginia, we are going to be bow hunting from about the first week of October into about the first week of November. That first week of November for us is when muzzleloader season opens, which we always kind of consider the sweet time of year. Obviously, most deer hunters do. That's when the rut starts kicking off. Not to mention, we got a smoke pole in our hands. We can reach out a little further, so it works out.
Yep.
For us, the rut kickoff in our area is typically around that first week in November. You'll start seeing two-year-olds and stuff get on their feet, start getting a little bit more rowdy, moving around in the pine thickets, maybe get on their feet a little bit earlier. You're starting to get trail camera pictures of bucks you haven't seen all year, or maybe you're getting trail camera pictures of a deer that you got sometime in the middle of the summer, and now all of a sudden he's back, and we can reach out 150 yards with a well-sighted muzzleloader, so that's exciting. In North Carolina, what comes after muzzleloader season for y'all? Y'all's muzzleloader season is about 2 weeks,
yep.
And then you roll right into dog season, right?
Right into dog season, which is our gun season, and that starts the second or third weekend in October and runs right to January 1st, and there you drop dogs the whole entire first week of the season, running dogs, buckshot, slinging, and then after that it goes to a still hunting only Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then organized dog hunts Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and you can still hunt after 3:30 or 3 o'clock, something like that. Mm-hmm. So needless to say, most of my days are spent working, and as soon as I'll take an hour off and then haul butt down to the hunt club and on those Sunday or Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays.
Mm-hmm.
And that's normally when I capitalize the most, is those weekday afternoons, taking an hour vacation. So
cool. Yeah, awesome. So I want to circle back a little bit because we kind of skipped over one of the sweeter parts, kind of one of my favorite parts of the year, which is that late October time frame in Virginia, right?
Yep.
So what we and a lot of deer hunters would consider the quote-unquote pre-rut, right? So bucks are going to start getting on their feet more. I always like to refer to that week as scrape week because I spend most of that week surveying trail cameras that I have on scrape locations and hunting scrapes that are near bedding areas. Scrapes are starting to get opened up. You're starting to see fresh rubs everywhere, starting to see bucks on their feet a little bit and stuff like that. So kind of that October, I would say 25th to 31st, right around Halloween time frame, is what I would consider that quote unquote scrape week. And for me, that's hunting near bedding areas, finding scrapes that are opening up, either hunting directly over the scrapes or hunting, you know, 50, 60 yards downwind of said scrape closer to the bedding area.
Yep.
That time frame of year, what's that look like for you?
Not too different, even though it's different terrain or habitat, if you will. I'm somewhat doing the same thing. I do a lot of summer scouting and winter scouting, just like most deer hunters do. And I'm one of those ones that hunts on past sign. And in Carolina, where I hunt at, because most of the areas are clear cut, you don't get the luxury of finding scrapes all over the place and rubs, and because trees aren't big enough. But once those clear cuts start to produce those first pines, you go ahead and, you know, turn around 360 degrees and pick a pine tree. It's going to have a scrape on it, on these young saplings.
Okay.
So it makes it a little bit harder to try to target where they're coming from, where they're bedding, because it's just, they're all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gone just on success I've had in the past, or I'm a big fan of especially once I get a rifle in my hands, going to those brand new clear cuts. Following the loggers is a really good strategy where I hunt at.
Mm-hmm.
Those clear cuts produce a lot of good food before the helicopters come in and start spraying them to kill all the growth around the pines coming up.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how I normally target the quote-unquote pre-rut in late October. I start hunting clear cuts even more, but ones that are outside the property, because most of the inside of the property, has already been ran to death by dogs so much.
Yep. So, again, the hunt club that I'm in Virginia, we don't dog hunt, right? But that doesn't mean dogs don't run through the property that we lease. Everybody in the entire county dog hunts, it seems like, and their brother and their cousin next door all run dogs. So, needless to say, dogs don't know property lines, right? So, come dog season, which for us, luckily, isn't until usually around November 18th. That dog pressure isn't going to reach over into our property, which is kind of getting towards the tail end of the peak rut for us, typically, anyway. But it does affect us still. But back to the scrape thing. So I have noticed kind of what you're saying. When there's those young pines and clear cuts, you'll get a lot of scrape activity around pretty much any overhanging branch on the edges of those clear cuts where it meets tall timber, right?
Yep.
And to me, I've always kind of looked at that as like a field scrape, right? Like if you were to say the two-year-old clear cut was the ag field, and then the pine stand or the SMZ behind that is the quote-unquote like bedding or the timber, right?
Yep.
Then the, or not so much the bedding, but the timber, right? So you'll find those small scrapes. I mean, you could walk the edge of one of these clear cuts. If there's overhanging branches, you might find 30.
Easily.
And a 100-yard line. And like, how do you hunt that, right? You don't. So it's, to me, that's just, you know, a buck that it's getting up. It's pre-rut. He's starting to feel himself. He's getting excited. He's moving through the edge of that clear cut. He might be scent checking that area, kind of seeing if there's any early does coming in heat or anything like that. And he's just kicking up a little bit of dirt as he's walking along the edge of that. The difference between the area that Kale hunts and the area that I hunt is Kale's terrain is basically a gigantic 10,000 acre pine thicket. Where I hunt is a lot more diverse habitat. We've got, like I said, some ag mixed in. There is some, seldom, but there's some mature hardwoods. And if you can find where the mature hardwoods or the mature pines meet the edge of that pine thicket and you go inside of that timber, that's where I find like the big, a lot of people like to call them car hood size scrapes and stuff like that.
Yep.
And those are the ones that I'll throw trail cameras on and get a lot of daylight activity. And I have yet to kill a buck over one of those scrapes, but one of these days it's going to happen. So, yeah. So that's kind of like your pre-rut strategy. And it's kind of like what I like to do during that time frame. Let's move into the rut.
Yep.
So first week in November, you're using a firearm.
I'm using a firearm, but this is when I start to move to Virginia because the hunting gets so good that I don't like dogs to determine, you know, my success on a Saturday if I'm not working.
Yep.
So normally Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I save all my vacation for November, just like most deer hunters. And I try to get those first 2.5 weeks off just so I don't have to guess when's the prime date. And Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'll be in Carolina hunting clear cuts, or it's not always clear cuts, some of our older timber that wherever a lot of clear cuts meet in different age ranges, it just seems to be that sweet spot. A lot of activity, the few scrapes that I do find are in there, few rubs that I find are in where those 10, 15-year-old clear cuts or cutovers meet those young ones. So I'll hunt those primarily in, I've kept an Excel spreadsheet since 2017.
Okay.
Based off of somebody that just happened to get lucky or somebody that's out there that's specifically still hunting. But I record all these dates and times and winds and everything. And I've even tried to correlate the moon phase into it, but I haven't had success.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I just haven't found a way to connect it to how I'm hunting, especially during the rut.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't found any correlation with that whatsoever. I just know that November 1st or even early into October 25th and November 1st is just a sweet time when those bucks are starting to get on their feet. But to go back to your November question, I'm starting to hunt more areas that look like yours. And when I go into Virginia, I'm hunting an area where you could probably shoot a duck, a turkey, you catch a puppy drum, you know, all out of the same blind.
Yeah, up in Virginia.
Yeah. But kind of like your area, you're trying to find those scrapes and rubs and your stereotypical pinch points between different terrain. And once again, hunting out of a climber. Very rarely do I hunt the same place twice.
Mm-hmm.
Preseason scouting, I don't really do a whole lot in Virginia because I'm only going there for the rut and I'm trying to find what's fresh and what's active at that time.
Yep, makes sense.
So,
probably a bunch of people pulling their hair out hearing Kale say climber multiple times because I know in today's hunting industry, everybody and their brothers got the newest, latest, greatest saddle, standing sticks, mobile stand, whatever you have that you hunt on.
And they're all great. They all have their time and their place. Where we hunt, especially where Kale hunts, I'm going to say, in that pine thicket country, the climbers can be so versatile because, well, why don't you just, I'll let you touch on that a little bit.
Yeah, so the climbers, everyone I'm sure has heard of Summit tree stands. Mm-hmm. I use a, I don't want to call it an off-brand, but it's the same principle. It's like your Summit climber with a little bit of an adjustable shooting rail. Mm-hmm. I think made manufactured by Buckshot or something along those lines, but I've got four of them. I'm a huge fan.
Okay, clearly. Yeah.
But to the primary reason I love climbers on my properties is you cannot find straighter pine trees in the United States in my home club. You don't, unlike the saddles where you're using them, you can use saddles anywhere, but normally it's based off of getting in quiet, but you don't have straight trees to work with.
Right.
My pine trees, straight as you can be, probably not like, they don't get the lumber from Home Depot where they cut my pine trees down.
Yeah, not to mention, you're hunting 2-3 year old clear cuts and you get up, I mean, it's pretty dang easy to get up 35 feet, 40 if you wanted to in a climber.
Absolutely.
Because you don't have to rely on sticks or other hardware, aiders, et cetera, stuff like that. So in a climbing stand, you can just, once you got the cables around the tree, the loud part's over for the most part.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the trees that I'll pick out for my pre-rut, rut, post-rut, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. when I'm hunting with a gun, those trees I've either already climbed in the past and had success over, and if it's a new spot, I will climb those trees during the summer and rake some of the bark off that tree as I'm climbing it.
Okay.
That way, I'm not saying it makes you completely foolproof quiet, but makes it a little bit more stealthy when you're climbing up that tree when you're not knocking off fresh bark. But straight trees and the ability to have a shooting rail, I'm not the best shot. And having that shooting rail, shooting anything past 100 yards with a scope really helps me zero in and hit my target.
Absolutely. Yeah, no doubt. So kind of to talk about the rut a little bit in Virginia, the benefit there, as you heard Kale say, he will even himself shift over to Virginia during that sweet time of the year. And the primary reason for that is going to be the lack there of dog pressure because our dog hunting doesn't kick in until about the third week of November. So with that, you get 2 solid weeks of rut hunting with a muzzleloader in your hand if you choose to use it. And it's downright awesome. I mean, obviously, it's the rut. Everybody who deer hunts is listening to this knows that the rut is awesome. I don't have to explain that. But for me, yeah, it's kind of similar terrain features. If I'm hunting a pine thicket, I'm usually going to hunt a streamline management zone. For those who aren't familiar with the streamline management zone, basically what it is when you have a pine stand and you harvest that pine stand, by law, the timber company cannot cut a certain, distance around a waterway that moves through that pine stand, right? And some people refer to it as a riparian zone, so maybe you're more familiar with that. In that area, there's going to be mature trees because it hasn't been cut in years.
Yep.
Oftentimes, it's going to be hardwood trees, really big trees, sometimes mature pines mixed in, sometimes your junky trees like your sweet gums and stuff like that, which personally, sweet gum is my favorite tree to climb because they're typically pretty straight, don't have a lot of limbs hanging off the side.
Quiet.
Yes, very that was quiet. Where I was going. Yeah, really quiet to climb. I mean, if you're using a climber, lock-on, whatever you're using, when you bite your equipment into that bark, it doesn't make a whole lot of noise like a pine tree would.
Yeah.
So anyway, I like to hunt those streamline management zones when I'm hunting a pine thicket. That seems to be a really good funnel for deer movement. If you're not familiar, you can picture, like, if you were in the Midwest, picture a 400-acre CRP field with a mature stand of pines that's 40 to 80 yards wide running through the slam middle of that CRP, which for us is going to be what we call cutover, which is broom straw, short pines, greenbrier, stuff like that, the thicket. So you've got bedding everywhere, and then you've got these funnels that move through it, and you can find me in one of those in November, hands down. If I'm hunting the ag portion of the area that I lease, typically it's going to be your traditional inside corners, stuff like that. A lot of times I'll just sit an actual field because, especially during that later part of the season, it seems like the deer are starting to kick over to wanting to eat the soybeans again. The leaves have come off the soybeans. And you've got that mature bean coming off and, you know, protein and what have you. Deer are going to be out there hammering that. And with that, the does come out. You know what follows does during the rut, right? So I'll hunt field edges. I'll hunt those streamline management zones. I'll hunt the inside corners. I'll hunt a connecting piece of terrain or timber between two different ag fields or two different, maybe you have two small isolated chunks of timber across an area of a farm with soybeans or corn or something in between. And I'll hunt the area between the two, but really, for me personally, I like hunting the pine thickets during the rut. It's kind of my favorite place to be, and I know you're the same. So
absolutely, and touch on too, the climbers and mobile hunting. When we talk about hunt clubs, you know, it might sound like we just have this private lease and everybody respects, you know, the, this is my 500 acres and this is yours. And it's normally not the case. I mean, you'll have people that have had ladder stands on a tree for 30 years, you know, and they'll, you know, hunt it, whether it's the right wind, the wrong wind. And it's easier to rule out areas based off of the pressure that you see from other people. And, you know, we have pinup boards. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to find out where the pressure's at on the hunt club.
Yeah, especially in my club. Because we've got the old school traditional pinup boards where it's you have a number and your number is labeled and you take your number and you put it where you're going to hunt, and it's a punch board. So you put the, it's basically like a thumbtack that goes into a large piece of paper that's got the map of the property highlighted, right? So you put that thumbtack into the paper and you've hunted there. So if there's an area, like let's say there's a inside corner that's popular, right? You can look at the map and it looks like that piece of the pinup board was shot with birdshot. Like everybody's and their brother's been there for the last 6 years, you know, and it's pretty
exactly what it looks like is birdshot.
Yeah, absolutely. So it kind of is a helpful tool if you can utilize that and be like, okay, well, this is clearly where the pressure's been, you know?
Yeah.
So that's nice.
And just like the pinup boards that, you know, we've used in Virginia, I'll somewhat utilize, you were talking about earlier, the dog hunting pressure. A lot of times, too, when I first started hunting Carolina, it's just, it's a vast sea of pines. And it's like, what makes this clear cut better than that clear cut? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, you know, we use VHF radios and handhelds. And the dog runners will get on the radio, big buck crossed, you know, railroad 28, you know, whatever road it is on the stand marker. And then, you know, you'll start to put pieces of the puzzle together, like, hey, well, that's where they jumped them. So I'll mark that mentally or write it down. I'm a big spreadsheet guy.
Okay, yep.
And I'll do that throughout the season. And then come January 2nd, I'm out there, boots to the ground, walking every bit of that and finding out what made that area.
Yeah, why was that buck bedded right there?
Exactly.
Yeah, makes sense, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I've done that in the past, and it's worked out. And the only thing that really changes with that is just the logging. There's so much logging. Timber's at an all-time high, and it has been for the last couple of years, and the new owners of our property are getting their money's worth. Mm-hmm. Not so great for the turkey hunting, but excellent for the deer hunting.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Well, yeah, so we've talked about the rut a little bit. Like I said, I'm just going to be like a brush over of strategy today. We're not going to really like deep dive too much. So touched on the rut. Let's move on to late season. So, yeah. Do you do much late season hunting in North Carolina?
I do, but I take a break. I'm a new father, so I try to I've kind of burned all my brownie points through October and November.
That makes sense.
So obviously I want to spend time with my family, do the Christmas things, and enjoy the, you know, the season. But come after the week of Thanksgiving, I'm not going to say my mind goes into full-on crappie fishing, but it starts to wander a little bit. But I still do actively hunt on Saturdays and Sundays. I just don't take time off for it. But normally that last week of December, the last 2 weeks of December is when I start to get after it again. The big bucks, they start forming back in their bachelor groups. And a lot of times it's still hunting, you can forget it. Mm-hmm. Those bucks are not getting up for anything until late, well after dark.
Yeah, they've been ran by dogs for the last 2 months. So.
Yeah, so normally those last 2 weeks of December is where I start to actively dog hunt, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. Is when I partake in festivities, and it's fun. I've killed a lot of good deer dog hunting too.
Oh, yeah,
it definitely pays off.
Killed my first deer dog hunting.
Yeah, it's exciting. Good camaraderie, good food at camp. It, you know, afterwards, it's exciting. But killed a lot of nice deer dog hunting those last 2 weeks. The only bad part is they've either broken off half the rack from their buddies, or the buckshot that's been fired at them, or they've already shut them off. So it's a crapshoot for what you're going to get. But the last 2 weeks of December, I'll hit it hard, but it's normally also because I want to already start my scouting for next season. Mm-hmm. Like during lunchtime, or if my stand's not so hot and I can get down, you know, I'll go exploring if there's, you know, the hunt's ran out of my block, and I'll kind of kill two birds with one stone.
Makes sense, yeah. So for me, late season, I'm not hunting the coastal part of Virginia anymore at all. Because as I briefly touched on earlier, the only area, there's not much public land at all here in the area that we live in. The area that I hunt is about 100 miles west of here that I'm going to be primarily hunting during the rut and the late season. For late season, Kale knows me. Y'all don't know me too well yet, but Kale knows that by about December 1st, I'm already yelping on a mouth call and practicing putting my leafy jacket on and making sure my turkey vest is loaded down because my brain's already started to shift pretty hard. So
I'd say when they drop that turkey on Thanksgiving Day on the table, it starts getting the mouth call.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm a pretty dang passionate turkey hunter, so my mind starts to wander pretty hard. Once we're in December, I'm basically counting down the days to the spring, so I'm like ready to see some green on the trees and hear some turkeys gobble. But I do try to partake in a little bit of late season hunting. Like I said, the hunt club area that I'm at, and there's also a good chunk of public over there as well that I like to hunt. I hunted a bit last year in the late season. I do have intentions of hunting it during the rut this year, so we'll see how that goes, because kind of visited it for the first time and it was beautiful, so I'm gonna revisit that. But anyway, late season hunting down there, I'm really just focusing primarily on food sources. Got a lot of fields in the area that I hunt. It's a lot of ag, so cut soybean fields, cut corn fields are really popular in the late season. And I'll just basically hunt a lot of that stuff during the late season if I'm gonna deer hunt. So that's where I'll be at.
First doe that walks out gets it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So that's another thing I wanted to cover on. Thank you for bringing that up. My mindset again with the deer hunting is going to completely shift in the late season, or it's kind of like comes full circle, right? Like I said, early season smacking does during the prime time, which I'm going to consider like last week October, first 2 weeks of November. I'm obviously rut hunting. I'm trying to fill the wall with some antler, but and then it comes full circle in the late season, and I'm just smashing does again. Any doe or decent buck at that point, if I have a buck tag left, and he's getting it. So
yeah, it's kind of boils down to we're only. I would, if you want to throw a whole number at it, maybe 1 month, 3 weeks that we're actually focusing on the bucks. And then the other 2 months of our long deer season is does.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of true. Yeah.
And we get, unlike a lot of states too, Virginia gets 6 tags, Carolina gets 6 tags.
Yep,
you can burn them all on does if you want to. Or Carolina, we used to have 4 buck tags, but they dropped it down to 2, which a lot of people were upset about, but I was actually quite the fan of.
Right.
In Virginia, you know, 3 buck tags, 3 doe tags.
I mean, let's be honest, if you're filling 4 buck tags in eastern North Carolina or Virginia, you're probably not filling them on mature animals. And if you are, I need to have you on this podcast.
Exactly.
And we need to talk about it, because that's really impressive. And also, what do you do for a living and how much time do you get off? Because yeah. I gotta know.
Yeah, how much is the leash you're hunting?
Yeah, no kidding. No, that's the second part of that.
But that's kind of what makes it fun too. Like, mm-hmm. Every hunter, I feel like, starts out through a journey where they, you know, they want to shoot their gun the most times, and then they want to kill their first buck, mm-hmm. and they want to kill a bigger buck. And I'm not one that's trying to hit a certain inch of antlers,
right.
But anyone that I'm willing to spend $500 on a shoulder mount for, mm-hmm. I'd rather focus on 1, 2 if I'm lucky, and just be happy with that, and you know, not have an antler or a wall full of antlers. That, you know, start to lose memory over the time. So
yeah. So to bring it back a little bit to Virginia, we kind of touched a lot on the North Carolina season, but here in Virginia, it's that, like I said, archery all of October into the first 2 weeks of November are going to be muzzleloader season, and after that is when our dog hunting season / gun season starts, whatever you want to call it. I don't do a ton of gun hunting, but really mostly just because I burn all my vacation time late October and first 2 weeks of November, kind of similar to yourself. Excuse me. Yeah, so that's how our season rolls. As far as tags, you were saying y'all get 2 buck tags and 6 doe tags, right?
4 doe tags.
4 doe tags.
6 tags altogether, but kind of like you, I mean, if it wasn't for the last 2 weeks of December, you know, it's funny, we have such a long gun season here in Virginia, North Carolina, but I feel like we don't really utilize a whole lot of it. We're bow hunting and mm-hmm. muzzleloader hunting, and then for me in Carolina, I do gun hunt a lot just because of the way the seasons fall.
Right, yeah.
But once Virginia, you know, comes in, I might hunt 1 weekend with a gun.
Because you're in Virginia.
Because I'm in Virginia. Yeah.
Makes sense. Yeah. So here in Virginia, we get 3 buck tags and 3 doe tags, 6 tags total. You can use them all on does if you'd like. But yeah. Anyway. So like I said, here we are, late season. Our focus has shifted to smashing does. For me personally, I'm fortunate that during the summertime in the coastal region of Virginia, I do a lot of depredation deer hunting for the farmer of the farm that I lease. I get 15 depredation tags, which I've never filled all of those, but I'll usually fill 3 or 4 during the summer. And I am bow hunting because it's an urban area. He's told me I could use a firearm, but I'm just not comfortable with it, with the way the terrain lays out, where the houses are. Like I said, people are walking their dogs by and stuff. And like, I mean, they're 200 yards off of where I'm hunting.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to say sorry.
Yeah, ain't no doubt. Ain't no sorry. So, so I bow hunt it, and it usually gets, the deer will feel the pressure pretty quick when you're set up on the inside corner of a soybean field and shooting them with a bow every night for the first couple weekends of June or whatever.
But that's also how you get the jitters out, is it not? When buck season finally comes in Virginia, whacking a few does during the summertime definitely gets those first of your jitters out.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic practice. I don't know if that's the best word to use, practice, but it's done mounds for me just as an archer, really. I mean, when I first got into bow hunting, it's tough for everybody because you practice and you practice and you practice, and then you get however much time you get to hunt is the actual time on stand where you get to point the bow at a deer and shoot. So with the depredation tags during the summer, I usually get a good chunk of opportunity. So that's really good.
Yeah. And all of that meat does not go to waste. It may sound like we're just whacking does fun of it, but we meal prep with it, and mm-hmm. I can't speak for Kevin, but I'm pretty sure every day that's meal prep. We eat deer every day, and it's no problem to eat 6 deer a piece through the season.
Easily. Yeah.
Easily.
No problem.
Between our families, and that's being very ethical and taking our time with processing said deer too.
Yeah, so with that being said, come the late season, like I said, I'm a little bit burned out. I've got a freezer full of does probably because I killed 3 or 4 during the summer, and then I might have killed 1 or 2 during early season.
Don't want to drag this one out.
Yeah. And then maybe I killed a buck. If I'm lucky, I killed 2, here in Virginia. And like I mentioned before, passionate turkey hunter. So come December, I'm looking for turkey sign, and I'm yelping on a mouth call and sighting in my red dot and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Checking the shows out.
Oh, yeah. So, that kind of covers the layouts of the seasons between North Carolina and Virginia. Let's talk a little bit about summer. We're in June now, right?
Yep.
So it's kind of a sweet time of the year. It's like, all right, turkey season's well over. It's time to start thinking about deer hunting. What kind of plans do you have for this summer for prepping for the deer season?
So I've done most of my work. Like I said, I hunt a lot of pre-hung places that I've had success with in the past, and I always try to find 2 or 3, 4 spots to hit during the rut to test out. So most of my work's already done on these straight pine trees. The only thing new I'm doing is going down to the club and seeing where the loggers are logging at to try to, quote-unquote, mark those as the food plots, depending on when they cut them, because there's a lot of nutrition in those food plots when they clear-cut them. And summer growth, all the greenery comes up.
Makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, and for, a club doesn't have ag, that's our ag. So a lot of times we'll have people that will come in there and they'll put their 3 ladder stands up or something like that. And as soon as I see that, it's kind of a turn-off. One, I want to give them the respect that, you're probably manicuring this area. And also, I just don't want to hunt around people. So I've already found some places. I've got my bow set up, so I've got my muzzleloader set up, and I've got my rut set up. Mm-hmm. But summertime, fortunately for me, my club borders a river in eastern North Carolina called the Chowan. So this is probably one of my favorite times of the year because it's turkey season's just ended. I've got catfish jugging, bass fishing, shellcracker. And then living next to the Chesapeake Bay, I've got flounder fish and spade. I mean, it's a combination of fishing and doing summer work, so it never feels like work. Mm-hmm. I don't start baiting until the last week of August because people are still running dogs on the property, and I'm not really gathering a whole lot of intel.
Explain, the running dogs in the off-season.
Okay, yeah. So a lot of, we talked about, dog hunting culture runs deep in the South, mm-hmm. and it's not just primarily for deer season. A lot of people that hunt in my club that own dogs don't even carry a gun. They're just in it for the sport of working with hounds, and I respect that. They put a lot of time and effort into their dogs. Mm-hmm. Like I said, not for everybody, but we all hunt under the same license, and I respect that.
Right.
But to keep their dogs in shape and just to keep them out of kennels, they'll on a summer night or very first thing in the morning, so you're missing the heat of the day, mm-hmm. they're running their dogs all throughout the property.
Okay, and that's kind of like their training. It's like their live training, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I normally, I'm doing work that time of year, but I'm not putting trail cameras out. But by mid-August is when we have a rule that no more dogs on the property because we got bow season in a month.
Yeah.
And so it normally starts to calm down a little bit. Those deer get less pressured.
Yeah.
So to me, starting to corn in June or July and putting trail cameras out for deer that you don't even know are going to be here the next day.
Yeah.
I don't know, kind of pointless. So June and July is mostly doing whatever work I got to do, finishing up last minute shooting lanes, you know, climbing trees, knocking bark off. A lot of times too, I'll go up there and put a thumbtack at the height that I exactly want my climber at. Absolutely. So in the dark, you know, yeah, when you're climbing up a pine tree at 4:30 in the morning, you know exactly where to stop and what direction to face. Cause I've had times before where you don't do that and you're, you know, sunlight comes up and you're looking around and saying, where in the heck am I at? Yeah. And you look behind you like, oh, dang it. So little small stuff like that. But, sometimes too, you know, cutting, paths in the clear cut, clear cuts that we hunt, forming shooting paths and stuff like that, making little access trails and kind of man-made, transitions, if you will, forced walking paths.
Yeah.
So little stuff like that here and there, but, come August is when I start, all my stands have been hung. If they are pre-hung for bow season, they're already in the woods.
Okay.
But late August, start putting bait out here and there, putting the trail cameras out, seeing what's hot and seeing what's not.
Gotcha. Yeah, so we cannot bait in Virginia. So my summer work this summer consists of two food plots. This is actually my first time ever planting food plots. I've been similar to Kale in the past where if I'm doing summer work, it's primarily finding areas that I know I've had historical success in and climbing trees, clearing shooting lanes, getting all that stuff ready. This year, I found an area, well, Kale and I actually found it last year while we were rut hunting at my club. And it's just like an old log deck that's in the center of this clear cut. It's kind of on a high point, surrounded by bedding. I slapped a trail camera on it, and I guess it was like, I want to say it was like the second week of November. I slapped a trail camera on it. And we were getting pictures of deer in daylight. I mean, I didn't really have the camera in a super advantageous location to like trap deer movement or anything like that. It was just kind of looking at the middle of this log deck. Like there was some sign there and we were like, well, let's see what moves through here. And we got a couple bucks on camera, a lot of does. And like I said, that area is surrounded by bedding. About 200 yards to the northeast of that log deck, I killed a buck last year. And so we know there's bucks that use the area. So I was like, well, we got a log deck here. We've got an access path that's wide as a tractor. This would be a good spot to plant my first food plot.
And nobody hunts it.
Yeah, not a soul hunts
anywhere around it.
And the reason being is there's not a tree to get in.
Yep. So that's a lot of things. And we've run into this hunting Virginia and Carolina. If it's not 100 yards from the road with an easy paved walking path, a lot of people don't want to go hunt it.
Yep. So I guess it was about 3 weeks ago. I slipped in there with my trailer and put a tripod up. I cut the perimeter of kind of where I'm going to plant with a bush hog and sprayed it down with glyphosate, killed everything for the first time. Got a buddy of mine in another state, and he's a food plot expert, and he told me if you go in and kind of start killing that weed root system during early in the growing season, it'll make your work in the late summer a little bit easier before you plant. So I did that, and I'll be back in August to bush hog it again, spray it again, and then come Labor Day weekend, I'll be disking and planting. So I got that going on. Really not a whole lot more for me for summer work this year. I'm probably going to hunt mostly historical spots that I know I've had success in or have seen bucks in or whatever this year. And I'm going to be hunting some public land and stuff too. And I'm also going to be doing some traveling during the rut. I'll be doing my first out-of-state whitetail hunt this year. So we'll touch on that on probably another episode. But
doing some sick of deer hunting too?
Oh, yeah. So that's another thing is like during the early season, I love sick of deer hunting. So I'll hunt whitetails during the early season, but I'll also go over to the Eastern Shore, Virginia, Maryland, and do some sika deer hunting because that is downright a really good time. And Kale's going to be joining me this year, so I'm pumped about that.
I'm super excited for that.
it is a good time. But don't get me down that rabbit hole because we could talk about that for another hour. So
those that don't know that live out west, it's take your elk and shrink it.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. The first one I shot, it was, I want to say it was 55 pounds live weight. And when I shot it, I called my buddy who's like a known sika deer killer. And I was like, Tyler, I got one. And he's like, oh, did you? And I said, yeah, I think it's a fawn. I was like, but I got one. And he was like, all right, buddy, I'll be there in a little bit. Just sit tight. It's probably a nice deer. And I was like, all right. And he come over and he's like, oh, dude, I think it's probably 5 years old. And I said, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Oh, man. So anyway, really good time there. And we'll talk about that more on another podcast because that's a whole subject of its own, talking about sika deer hunting, because that's a really, really cool subject that I feel like not a lot of people have a ton of experience with, but it's awesome. Yep. So that kind of covers the seasons. summer work. What do you have for trail cameras? Are you going to do anything with trail cameras this summer? Do you do summer trail cameras?
I do summer trail cameras, like I said, mainly for my does. I just want to make sure that does are coming to the corn pile.
Yeah. In the daylight.
if I'm getting trail cam pics of little cow horns and, you know, scrub bucks, then I'm probably not going to spend a lot of time there. I'm only interested in the does. Mm-hmm. I do use trail cameras a little bit during the rut, but like we were talking about, like how do you put a trail camera in a 200 acre clear cut that mm-hmm. all looks the same? Mm-hmm. There's so many trails that run in and out of these clear cuts that if you're hunting that magical time of year, you know, you get your wind playing in your favor. And you know, once that frost clears, you can shoot across a clear cut 150 yards and then it's more of a waiting game. So the trail cameras that we run on our property during the rut, it always seems like the deer that I'll get on camera, somebody ends up shooting 500 yards down the road and vice versa. I'll have, you know, as soon as we get back to the skinning shed, people will be like, oh, I had that deer on camera all of October. I'm like, well, I saw him once in November and he's dead. I've never had a whole lot of luck. My camper buddy seems to actually have a lot more luck with the trail cameras than I do. For early season bow season, muzzleloader season, mm-hmm. and November, they've really made the bait game work for them the whole entire season until probably that middle of November.
Yeah,
because they'll utilize the bait for the does that, you know, bring in the bucks, even if they're, you know, being standoffish with the rifle, you know.
Yeah.
So that's their strategy, but mine's mainly for the early season. Once middle of October comes, I'll put them out more just to get me excited to see what's on the property, but yeah, it's not always where I'm hunting at.
Gotcha. Yeah. So yeah, kind of similar for me. Rather than the corn pile thing, what I'll do in September, since my season's not open yet, is I will go and find white oak trees that are holding acorns. Look up at them with binoculars, find big mature white oak trees that are holding, and I'll find where I think deer bedding near or around said white oak tree, and I'll back up off of the white oak tree, either put the camera looking straight at the white oak tree where the acorns are going to drop, or back up off of that and put it on like a moon trail between the bedding and said white oak tree.
Yep.
And that'll be like kind of like my doe camera. I haven't had a ton of success with that, but it's something fun I like to play with in the early season.
It's fun. Yeah. Gets the excitement and anticipation up.
You know, just seeing if there's does on their feet in daylight, and that's cool. So other than that, most of my cameras are going to go into spots for inventory, and that's basically all I use them for. I've, in the past, tried to put trail cameras in areas where I intend to kill a deer during the rut, and have never had success with it.
Neither.
In the type of terrain we hunt, it's just tough because it's monotonous, clear cuts, pines, stuff like that. It's just hard to pinch a buck down in that and get him on camera routinely, you know? So I've switched to kind of just using the trail cameras more so for inventory, and I'll put them on an inside corner. I'll put them on an ag field. I don't care if the pictures are daytime, nighttime, 3 a.m., whatever. I'm really just getting an inventory like, oh, there's a nice buck in the area over here, you know?
Yep.
Cool. And also, game cameras are fun, right? They're just fun. So I'll put mine out usually around August, September, somewhere around there. And when I put them on a tree, they usually just stay there until December.
Good intel.
And when I go back to Turkey Scout, that's when I grab them.
Our camera, I can't say our cameras, because like I said, my camper buddy, he makes good use of me around. And the inventory he gets is ridiculous. Like, you know, I'm looking at bucks that are 16, 17 inches wide. I'm like, that would make me happy. And, you know, he's still got his bait piles out in the middle of November. And you'll see that one hot doe in there with an absolute freak behind her. Mm-hmm. So, but I enjoy mobile hunting too much after that and moving from clear cut to clear cut, as long as it's not infringing on somebody else mm-hmm. At the club. But middle of October, once the first dog drops, my trail cameras kind of come out, and I'll try to move them to Virginia or something like that just to take inventory or see what's going on up there. But I have not had very good luck once the dogs hit the ground of any kind of pattern where I've been hunting at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and I saw some when I stopped baiting too. So,
yeah. So, like I said, for me this summer, a food plot or two that I'm working on. One of them may or may not end up being a food plot. It might just end up being a massive shooting lane in a known bedding area. I might plant it just because I'm going to have some extra seed left over from my other micro plot. But we were just discussing that earlier. I'm not really sure what I'm going to do with that yet. But anyway, trail cameras, food plots, and shooting the bow a ton. Yep. I usually pull mine out about June 1st. I switched arrow setups this year, and I'm currently awaiting my custom arrow build. Should be done here in the next week or so, and haven't really wrapped up shooting until I get those, and I got to retune the bow and stuff. So once I do that, it'll be in the backyard every day. I kind of have a routine of making my way out to the backyard about 30 minutes before last light and shooting for 30 minutes about every day that I have the capability to do so. So, yeah, I think that's going to about cover it for the season layout and summer work. So with that, I think we're going to close. Okay. But Kale, I appreciate having you, man.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Super excited to talk about more of it.
Oh, absolutely, dude. Yeah, again, for the listeners, can't thank you enough for listening. I really appreciate it. And we'll be bringing you some more content here really soon.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.